You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 26 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, I chat with Derek Yanser from Rensburg. We had a massive day on the market yesterday. 28 billion traded. Willie's updates, NASPAS flying, but a little AVI update also snuck in sort of late afternoon, which I thought wasn't a bad update at all. Gareth Elston, I want to try and understand the Redefine. They're not paying a dividend. They need to pay a dividend because of their REIT status. How is this all going to shake out? And then Anthony Clarke, as Blantyre takes a stake and the Ascendus debt, and perhaps what about a capital raise instead of selling assets? MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper focus on acquiring stable, income producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low risk commercial real estate, primarily in a healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Expect a lower tax shortfall, according to HSBC. Isaac Odendor mentioned that as well last week. HSBC saying the shortfall will be $251 billion, still a giant number, but the expected number had been $300 billion, so about 15% better than expected. And then Bloomberg ByteDance foe seeks $5.4 billion in biggest tech IPO since Uber. So this is why Tencent was running and why therefore NASPAS in process. It's a TikTok competitor spinning out of Tencent, looking for a valuation of about $60 billion, looking to list around sort of late next week in Hong Kong. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.4, Nasdaq 0.7. Asia mixed, we got Sydney up 0.4, Tokyo down 0.9%. Commodities, red, exception is gold at 18.59. Rand weaker, 15.28. Top 40 looking for a red opening, about 0.9% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Derek Yanser from Rensburg. He is a portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. A lot happening on the market yesterday. What caught my eye, and I don't know if you had a look at it, it's a smallish little stock, AVI, the 6 months to December, not a bad update. We're eating a little less snacks. Makes sense. That was during hard lockdown. But, you know, volumes are other products are sort of almost back to pre-lockdown levels. HEPS expected to be a couple of percentage points higher. I've always rated AVI, and this is not a bad update.
Yeah, agreed, Simon. I think that AVI came out of the starting box there quite strong. And I think, you know, it also talks to how South African businesses have really streamlined their business models, you know, cutting costs and really, you know, keeping things wafer thin in this environment. So, obviously, low base effects also coming through, or base effects coming through. But certainly, you know, I think there's a degree of leverage that's going to be put in place in a lot of these food retailers when you do start to see an uptick in, you know, gross expenditure taking place. So a really good update. And I think obviously, you know, you saw that base effect take place in the likes of Woolies. And I think it's positive, and obviously markets making new highs again yesterday. So, you know, it does seem like there's a little bit of wind in the sails when it comes to, call it, the SA Inc. basket at this stage of the game.
Yeah, certainly. And to your point, I mean, the top 40 yesterday went through 60,000, first time ever. It closed at an all-time high, but it didn't hold onto the 60,000. The Woolies update as well. And if you break it up into the parts, I mean, food, SA Food, again, doing really, really well. Clothing, Australia, not so much. But it comes to that SA Inc. and particularly to food, which kind of makes sense. And in lockdown, we might not have been doing much, but we were eating, and seemingly more than usual.
Absolutely. I think it just talks to the resilience of these kind of businesses, you know, and you look at the likes of a ShopRite, a Pick and Pay, a Woolies, you know, anything in that sort of food retail space is certainly, and people want to spend money, you know. Obviously, we've had lockdown effects, and, you know, the only outing that you can really do in this kind of environment is really go get your basket of goods and, you know, do something, you know, at home and cook and continue, you know. And I think also from a Woolies perspective, they've got a few items on their shelves which certainly talk to high margin potential. Mm-hmm. And I think those were certainly flying off the shelves during this lockdown environment. Easy meals, things like that, really sort of boosting the food component of the Woolworths update that we saw yesterday coming through.
Yeah, I mean, that money that we had not, assuming we've still got a job, the money that we're not spending on, you know, going out at night and drinking or you know, dinner and that sort of stuff, that money is going somewhere. It's you know, sure, some people are saving it, but we're just spending it somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people, as we all know, you know, humans are social in nature. And, you know, if we have to sit down with our family and look to entertain that way, then we're going to sort of, you know, to just spend it on nice meals and obviously cook at home. And obviously you see that expenditure come through. So, yeah, again, you know, low base effects. We've been through a very tough sort of macroeconomic environment for quite some time. So again, these businesses streamlining their sort of cost side of the structures of these businesses. So, you know, any sort of uptick and resurgence in sales is certainly going to move quite swiftly to the bottom line. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm still sort of positively leaning towards some of these food retailers, the mm-hmm. likes of a ShopRite, a Pick and Pay, even a Woolies for that matter. I think you could probably see some further upside in these stocks as we move through the course of 2021.
Yeah, and we should get that ShopRite update any day now. But the key point you say there, low base effect, let's not underestimate that. Derek Jensen van Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital, appreciate the time.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Gareth Elston. He is CIO at Reitway Global. Gareth, appreciate your early morning. Redefine late Friday afternoon came out with an update on their dividend for the year ending what was effectively August last year. And in a nutshell, they're saying we're not paying. Now, they are a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. The requirement is that REITs pay out 75% of distributable earnings. Is there an asterisk on that that says subject to liquidity and solvency?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, there is that asterisk there. I think we've all been waiting for this to be tested sometime this year. And we've had the first major one coming through. It might not be the last. But, it's interesting in that they've decided not to, especially looking at the statement where they're saying if they did pay, they would still pass solvency and liquidity requirements. So it would likely not be breached. But maybe there's something that would happen further in the year which would require them, would end up putting them in breach. So it's kind of interesting there. And then it puts the ball back in the JSE's court as to do they actually deal with this now, or do they find a way to try and not actually make a ruling on this, because it's going to ripple through the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I'll come to the JSE in a moment, but I like your point there. What they, you know, they did the liquidity insolvency. They've had some extensions on covenants, that loan to value going from 50 to 55% from the banks. They pass it, and then they say, but we're worried about the future. Now, I get we're in a pandemic, and the future is more worrisome, but I mean, truthfully, the future is kind of always a little bit unknown, and to me, that seemed a bit of a sneaky way out. You know, they, as you mentioned, they effectively did pass their solvency and liquidity, and therefore could have paid.
Indeed, but I also understand their position in a way. It's the industry is still under a lot of stress. Looking at South Africa into the rest of this year from a property point of view, it's certainly, despite what the market did in the last quarter last year with a massive bounce, it's certainly not all plain sailing, and it's probably going to be still very, very touch and go for a lot of sectors, you know, especially large malls. It's not going to turn around anytime soon, even if we start seeing the numbers coming down. There's a lot of pain still comes. So I get their point as well. But yeah, this is something I think that's going to still play out a little bit more as we go forward.
You mentioned the JSC. They obviously, you know, that they in a sense get the final say. The redefined sense did not mention that the JSC had approved, which was obviously telling that engagement starts. But I also, in December, we saw with HyProp where HyProp were trying to, you know, not pay a dividend or pay a scrip dividend. And in that case, the JSC came down quite clearly and said, you got to offer cash as the default. You can make scrip elective, and that worked for HyProp. People took scrip, they saved almost R750 million in the process, leaving their liquidity significantly stronger. But the JSC certainly put their foot down there.
Yeah, and I think they have to. It really goes to the view of the market and then the view of investors in general, is that if the JSC is going to just allow companies to do what they like willy-nilly and in contravention of the requirements, it makes them look like a bit of a joke. Mm-hmm. So they really do have to put their foot down. So that's why I think this is going to be interesting. But yeah, I think Redefine would have had the option of doing this. You know, the bulk of their large investors in these companies are investment companies, pension plans, etc. So, you know, getting them to get on board and to take a scrip dividend, you know, if you get the top 10 to do it, you've pretty much taken care of most of your payout requirements anyway. So it's interesting that this was not aware that Redefine decided to go or couldn't find the traction from the large investors.
I take your point in that, because in essence, what you could do as, you know, how proper Redefine is, go speak to your big investors and say, you know, we're going to give you the offer. Please take the script. And in many cases, they will, because, you know, investors don't want a threat of REIT status being lost.
Yeah, not exactly.
If they lose REIT status, it's more than just, and hypothetically, it's more than, I mean, you know, the one key benefit obviously is they don't pay the tax. That tax is paid by the individual who receives it. I mean, but REIT status is a lot more than that. I mean, it's the entire business model.
It is. It's what you have been selling yourself to your investors as providing. So losing it does have a big impact. It also has a big impact when your tax bill comes due, because you can bet your bottom dollar that, you know, SARS is watching this quite carefully as well and saying, well, thanks very much. Here's your bill and you need to pay. So it's going to, you know, definitely impact the business quite hard, and I think impact the broader industry too. So it's, they're going to need to deal with this. But SARS is definitely in the wings, I think, getting their calculators out, working out what needs to be paid, because they're not too fussed about your problems if you owe them money.
Yeah, and they're not too fussed where they get the tax from, but I hadn't thought of that. SARS is definitely calculating those numbers. Gareth Alston, CIO, Reitway Global, sir, appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Anthony Clark, a small cap analyst. You find him on, of course, the Twitter's smalltalk.daily. Anthony, morning. Appreciate your time. An interesting sense out of Ascendus Health yesterday. A bit of a backstory. They've got some issues around debt. They've got a sort of a standstill in sense from the lenders on condition they sell one of the European businesses. Suddenly the sense yesterday says, hang on, there's this company called Blantyre, who operate out of the UK, who kind of assist companies in Europe who have these sort of issues, who've come forward and said, we don't think selling assets is the right idea. A capital raise is a better idea, and ultimately keep that business in Europe, which is actually not a bad business at all.
Yeah, good morning, Simon, from sunny Cape Town. You've hit the nail on the head there. Ascendus, as you know, its current market value is about 372 million rand. Mm-hmm. They owe roughly 7 billion rand in debt from past endeavors, expanding very, very aggressively and building up a sizable sort of a debt position. And out of the blue yesterday came the sense that two companies, it's Blantyre Capital and Letter One, which has a $3 billion healthcare business, actually wants to get involved in restructuring and assisting Ascendus in sort of rehabilitating that large debt pool. Now, as you correctly say, the single biggest asset inside Ascendus is a Cypriot-based pharmaceutical company called Remedica, which basically is a crown jewel. Imagine it's the Kuinor in the crown of its operations, with a sizable chronic ARV and oncology division and operating extremely well. It's been the backbone of that company for many, many years. But as you say, one of the caveats of having a large debt pool, particularly in this country, is the banks who control the debt just want their pound of flesh. Mm-hmm. So they instigated a standstill agreement, which Ascendus paid a very large fee for last year, giving management a 12-month breathing space to sell the crown jewel, which they tried to do a year and a half ago when it fell apart. And a second beauty parade, I understand, occurred late last year, which could have proved quite successful. But Blantyre and L1 seem to fail. Keeping the crown jewels together, just restructuring the balance sheet, is probably a better plan going forward. So they now have negative control of Ascendus because they've bought enough of a debt from previously unhappy lenders, probably at a fair discount to markets, to actually get involved and engage with management. So that's the current story.
And it's going to get, I mean, interesting, as you point out, it's negative control. So as per the rules, you know, two-thirds of the debt lenders have to approve major corporate actions. They've now got more than a third. So in essence, there's a bit of a standoff that's happening in the debt market. And this is not at boardroom level, which is usually where these sort of they happen. In this case, it's at the debt level in the bond market.
Yeah, it's actually extremely interesting. If you knew the makeup of the former lenders, it was generally a consortium of banks. And as you and I both know, particularly in these tough times, when banks lend money, they generally ultimately want that money back.
Yeah.
And they will perhaps put onerous conditions and onerous lending rates on a distressed company, you know, to try and extract that value. So you can call them slightly unfriendly, but a bit like loan sharks, to be unkind.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the newer crowd, if I can call them that, the way that I understand it, and the methodology in assisting companies with problems like Ascendus, and particularly L1 Health, which has some very well-known luminaries from pharmaceuticals and corporate CEOs running the fund. They want to help rehabilitate the company and will be a lot less onerous than the banks. So they've bought the debt fairly cheaply, one would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the concerns going forward is, could there be a rights issue, convertible bond, some form of restructuring actually has to occur. And at this stage, I think that's the uncertainty. We just don't know what the new consortium actually wants to do, because it's literally just happened after 48 hours. But I would concur that at some point, ongoing asset sales to reduce debt and some form of balance sheet restructuring will occur. But I think it's very clear from the sense that Remedica, that crown jewel, which pumps money and profits into Ascendus, will be kept, because that's really what Blantyre and L1 think is the driving star of Ascendus going forward.
And that's the big story for the shareholders here. This is going to play out. It's going to take some time. But to your point, that Remedica is a massive quality asset. And the fact that there are attempts here for Ascendus to hold onto that asset is, bottom line, good news for Ascendus shareholders, notwithstanding we don't know how it shakes out.
Absolutely. I think what will probably transpire in the next couple of weeks is that more information will come out regarding this. And let's not forget that Ascendus is a December interim results period. And checking my sends yesterday evening, a note that I got coming out this morning, they traditionally issue a trading update in the first week of February.
Yeah.
So if history holds true, at some point in the next couple of weeks, an update to investors from Ascendus will be forthcoming. And let's not forget that in the current world we operate in, and the products that they actually sell, such as ventilators, respirators, chronic medication, one would imagine that they've probably had a fairly good second half, given what's going on with the world with COVID and a need for ventilators, nasal respirators, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But I think for a small company or a micro-cap story, it seems to generate an inordinate amount of press and investor interest. But I think this Blantyre and L1 Health has just added to the cocktail of what Ascendus could potentially become in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, they are definitely punching above their weight in the media space. We'll keep an eye on this. That's Anthony Clark. He's a small cap analyst. You find him on the Twitters, Small Talk Daily. Anthony, appreciate your time this morning. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 30. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is authorized financial service provider, license number 50483. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available wherever you get good podcasts from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.